Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time, yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon. If it's Tuesday, it's Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio and Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, South Carolina. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie. And today, Cool Mike is once again in court fighting for his rights, fighting for what goes on and what does not go on his ballot up there in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So, we have such a handsome, lovely, and talented gentleman joining us. Good afternoon, Chris Holly. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I don't know how I can follow that introduction. Thank you. Especially the handsome part. I'll take that one any day. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad Cool Mike's up there fighting a good fight, too. And I've been to Grand Rapids a few times. They have a lovely airport. That's what I remember, flying in and out of there. And hopefully he'll take care of business up there with their voting situation, it sounds like, up there in Michigan.
Yeah, he's actually sued the Election Commission and the city itself because they were putting something on the ballot that was improper, wasn't introduced properly. I didn't catch all the details, and it involves a tax. And so he just said, someone's got to step up into the breach of this fight, and he did. God bless his heart for that.
Absolutely. Anytime it says tax on there, I'm down for the fight. So absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And matter of fact, I've been going tooth and nail at our county council here down here in Beaufort, just south of where you're at, up in Charleston area. And one of the taxes they took off, they wanted to do a 1% sales tax to increase our reserve fund, which is at this point at 25%. And, you know, I don't know if you know anything about your county or government budgets, but a good, healthy reserve fund is 10%. They're at 25, mm-hmm. and they want to raise it up to 30%. And their excuse is hurricanes. Last time a hurricane touched here in Beaufort, where I am, not where you're up at, where we are,
right?
I believe was 1959.
Right. Well, I'm knocking wood, though, right now. I was here for Hugo. I was actually in Beaufort in Trip Island in near Beaufort area for Hugo, and then haul-tailed inland. But Beaufort's been lucky. When I lived in that area, we were spared a lot. They tend to come up this way towards Charleston, up towards Myrtle Beach in North Carolina, Outer Banks more. But there's always shenanigans involved anytime they can nickel and dime us piece by piece, any little 1% here, half a point here, half a penny here, you know, let's do it for the kids, we got to do it for the schools, you know, it's the same old up here and in every county across the country, you know, they'll game you all day long for any little bit more money they can get into their pockets to keep taxing us, especially if they do it slow. It's that slow burn, and you don't notice as much. A penny here, a penny there, and it just adds up into, you know, all of us waiting at Walmart with barrels full of money to buy bread. So,
yeah,
we definitely need to get it under control.
Yeah, we'll end up being like the Weimar Republic.
Exactly.
If anyone doesn't know that, just do a little research on pre-World War II and Germany and how they walked out with baskets and barrels of Deutschmarks simply to buy a loaf of bread. We're heading that direction if we don't keep an eye on this. And
amen.
Yeah, matter of fact, we had our Tea Party meeting last night, and there's a gentleman who entered just last week into the race for Lieutenant Governor, Ray Moore. And he was there, and he just wowed our crowd. And honestly, I mean, how he was so much for a limited government, telling us about, he was actually, I think this was about 10 years ago, wrote the bill to put South Carolina back on the gold standard, and we came within just a few votes of actually doing it. Right now, Utah is the only state that has a gold and silver standard backing their currency.
I can't believe I came that close. He's running for lieutenant governor. What was the person's name again?
Ray Moore.
I just don't know his name, unfortunately. Is he in state senate, or is he in town council anywhere, or is this new sort of a new venture for him?
I believe this is a new venture because I do believe he served in the House of Representatives. I have to go back to his bio to take a look, but he will be on our show come April, because right now I'm booked through April. And come April, we've got Dr. Waleed Perez coming back on. His office contacted me saying he's got a new book out, and he said he wants back on my show. So, folks, Southern Sense is getting up there.
Good deal. And it's good to hear that there's, you know, good people out there that are definitely trying to run. I had a great fortune of being with Alan West, Lieutenant Colonel West, in December. And, you know, he just stressed that point, how important it is to get the average American, especially himself being, you know, retired military, especially getting some of these vets involved and people like that running for office, and, you know, a lot of the private sector people running. I mean, no offense to many of my attorney friends, but there are a mass amount of lawyers up there in Washington that are all running the game and they're running for office. And we definitely need different walks of life getting involved in running. And I know it takes a lot of courage this day and age to go out and run, especially for a higher profile office, because the other side and the media, if they don't like you, is going to go to town on you, shredding you and every little detail of your personal life. But, you know, it shouldn't stop good people from running. You know, if you got the right mindset and a good heart about it, don't worry about some stuff you did when you were in high school or in college. Just hang in there and run.
Amen to that one. Listen, I've got an announcement, because my friend Colin Heaton and General Riley had asked me to make this announcement, and I said I will. And this is from the Georgia Department of Veterans Services. At 11 a.m. on Tuesday, that's next Tuesday, March 25th, in the north wing of the state capitol, Governor Nathan Deal will issue a proclamation declaring March 29th, 2014, as Vietnam Veterans Day in Georgia. The theme of the ceremony, which falls on the National Medal of Honor Day, is a tribute to Georgia's Vietnam Medal of Honor recipients, and the Georgia Department of Veterans Services will individually recognize each of the state's 12 Native sons who were awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor during the Vietnam War. One of those Native sons, Congressional Medal of Honor recipient, who has also been a guest on our show, James E. Livingston, Major General Retired, U.S. Marine Corps, will be on hand to give remarks. Colin Heaton, our friend, wrote the book Noble Warrior about James E. Livingston, Major General. And he will be giving a keynote speech on that. Also on hand will be Claude M. Kickliker, Lieutenant General, retired U.S. Army. He's the director of the Department of Defense Office of Commemorations. Vietnam veterans deserve our sincere respect, appreciation, and public recognition. This was a statement by Commissioner Pete Wheeler. We gather to honor the brave Georgians who served in that conflict, and we honor the service of every man and woman who put on a uniform and answered their nation's call to service. Program participants will include Atlanta Veteran Business Association, the West Atlanta Douglas Chorale Society, and the Westlake High School Junior ROTC. Over an estimated 250,000 Georgian residents, approximately one-third of the state's total veteran population, are Vietnam War veterans. As of the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War begins, the Georgia Department of Veterans Services invites all Georgians to pay tribute to the service and sacrifices of these brave men and women. These are some of the Vietnam War facts and figures. 8.7 million Americans served on active duty. 7,391 Vietnam War veterans are still alive today. 228,000 Georgians served. 1,584 Georgians were killed in action. 8,534 Georgians were wounded. 21 were held as prisoners of war, and 35 are still unaccounted for. If anyone is interested in visiting this memorial on Tuesday, March 25th in the Georgia Capitol, they can call 404-656-5933 or send me an email through this website, and I'll be happy to give you information on that. Chris, while we're waiting for our guests to call in, anyone that listens to our show knows that we do a dedication to a fallen hero. And sometimes we pick a person out that did not die in the line of duty, but their actions do deserve our recognition and honor. So today's dedication is going to go out to Major Edward W. Too Tall Freeman, a Medal of Honor recipient, for his actions at the Battle of La Drang during the Vietnam War. And this I take from Wikipedia, because really there was not that much I could find written about him. However, he was a subject of a movie. Edward W. Too Tall Freeman died August 20th, 2008. He was a United States Army helicopter pilot who received the military's highest decoration, the Medal of Honor, for his actions in the Battle of the Drang during the Vietnam War. During the battle, he flew through gunfire numerous times, bringing supplies to a trapped American battalion and flying dozens of wounded soldiers to safety. Freeman was a wingman for Major Bruce Crandall, who also received the Medal of Honor for the same missions. He grew up in nearby McLean, Mississippi, and graduated from Washington High School. At the age of 17, before graduating from high school, he enlisted in the U.S. Navy and served during World War II on the USS Cacapon for 2 years. Once the war was over, he returned to his hometown and graduated from high school. Immediately afterwards, he joined the Army. On April 30, 1954, he married Barbara Morgan. They had two sons, Mike in 1956 and Doug in 1965. Beyond his service in the Navy in World War II, he reached the Army rank of First Sergeant by the time of the Korean War. Although he was in the Corps of Engineers, he fought as an infantry soldier in Korea. He participated in the Battle of Porkchop Hill and earned a battlefield commission as one of only 14 survivors out of 257 men who made it through the opening stages of the battle. His second lieutenant bars were pinned on by James Van Fleet personally. He then assumed command of Company B and led them up Porkchop Hill. The commission made him eligible to become a pilot, a childhood dream of his. However, when he applied for pilot training, he was told that at 6'4", he was too tall for pilot duty. The phrase struck, and he was known by the nickname of Too Tall for the rest of his career. In 1955, the height limits for pilots was raised, and Freeman was accepted into flying school. He first flew fixed-wing Army airplanes before switching to helicopters. After the Korean War, he flew the world on mapping missions. By the time he was sent to Vietnam in 1965, he was an experienced helicopter pilot and was placed second command of his 16 Craft Unit. He served as a captain in Company A, 229th Assault Helicopter Battalion, 1st Cavalry Division, Air Mobile, on November 14, 1965. Freeman and his unit transported a battalion of American soldiers into the Ludrang Valley. Later, after arriving back at base, they learned that the soldiers had become under intense fire and had taken heavy casualties. Enemy fire around the landing zones was so heavy that the landing zone was closed to medical evacuation helicopters. Freeman and his commander, Major Bruce Crandall, volunteered to fly their unarmed, lightly armored UH-1 Huey in support of the embattled troops. Freeman made a total of 14 trips to the battlefield, bringing in water and ammunition and taking out wounded soldiers under enemy fire, heavy enemy fire, in what was later named as the Battle of Ludrang. He was subsequently promoted to the rank of major, designated as a Master Army Aviator, and was sent home from Vietnam in 1966. His Medal of Honor citation reads, Captain Edward W. Freeman, United States Army, distinguished himself by numerous acts of conspicuous gallantry and extraordinary intrepidity on November 14, 1965, while serving with Company A, 229th Assault Helicopter Battalion, 1st Cavalry Division Air Mobile, as a flight leader and second in command of a 16 helicopter lift unit. He supported a heavily engaged American infantry battalion at the landing zone X-ray in the Ludrang Valley, Republic of Vietnam. The unit was almost out of ammunition after taking some of the heaviest casualties of the war, fighting off a relentless attack from a heavily motivated, heavily armed enemy force. When the infantry commander closed the helicopter landing zone due to intense direct enemy fire, Captain Freeman risked his life by flying his unarmed helicopter through a gauntlet of enemy fire time after time, delivering critically needed ammunition, water, and medical supplies to the besieged battalion. His flights had a direct impact on the battle's outcome by providing the engaged units with timely supplies of ammunition critical to their survival, without which they would almost surely have gone down with a much greater loss of life. After medical evacuations, helicopters refused to fly into the area due to intense enemy fire. Captain Freeman flew 14 separate rescue missions, providing life-saving evacuation of an estimated 30 seriously wounded soldiers, some of whom would not have survived had he not acted. All flights were made into small emergency landing zones within 100 to 200 meters of the defensive perimeter, where heavily committed units were perilously holding off the attacking elements. Captain Freeman's selfless acts of great valor, extraordinary perseverance, and intrepidity were far above and beyond the call of duty or mission, and set a superb example of leadership and courage for all of his peers. Captain Freeman's extraordinary heroism and devotion to duty are in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect great credit upon himself, his unit, and the United States Army. And as a note, his commanding officer, Bruce B. Campbell, flew 22 missions in the same battle. He's still alive, and we thank these two men for their brave service, because someone's father came home. Someone's brother came home, someone's husband came home because of these two men. And because of them, we dedicate the song, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herndon. God bless each and every man and woman who have fought, who will fight, and are fighting for our future citizens, be it in the military or first responders. We can never say thank you enough.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend, because my name is America, was not taken from others. Others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flames, and I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. America is my name. For those who need me, I'll always be here. For those who will harm me, I'll face without fear. But I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America.
My name is Chris. I'm having trouble getting my teeth and tongue in the right position to talk today. Help me out here.
It's because it's too cold here for South Carolina. That's why. It's far too cold here on the east coast, southeast coast of South Carolina. It is English type weather. So that's what all it is. Don't worry, it'll warm up soon. Just to hear though, back to the dedication. Just to hear that story is just it is unbelievable and amazing. Just the heroic actions of so many over so many years in different wars, and there's countless stories as you've read on your program, and as trite as this might sound, or as simple or as silly as it sounds sometimes to people, if you see somebody in uniform and in the airport or out at the store at Walmart or somewhere, even if you just say walk up and say thank you to them, they know exactly what you're saying and what you mean, and I know they really appreciate it. And I really try to make an effort every time I see somebody to make a beeline right to them that's anybody in uniform and just tell them thank you, for your service, because this is a service by choice nowadays, and these people are giving up a lot and away from their families and just a pretty big sacrifice even to this day here, whether you're serving at home or abroad or anywhere. So I always make a point of thanking anybody I see in uniform, because that's one thing I never served. I'm a rock musician by trade. I think I have some guilt at times that I never served in any kind of military and was out just running around touring the world as a musician and kind of had it easy. And a lot of these guys and men and women have had a tough go at this over the years. So, just always remember to get out there and thank those people. There's some good people out there.
Well, also, if you see someone that's wearing veteran either a hat or a jacket or a T-shirt, walk up them too. Because like I said, I had the Tea Party meeting last night, and I would say most of the men that were there had served in Vietnam or Korea. And, you look around the room and, you just can't help but feel the pride because they show up and, they're wearing their Vietnam Memorial hat or they're wearing their jacket with their patches on it. And you really, honestly, you can never say thank you enough. And speaking
exactly.
of that, someone that is a defender of freedom and is fighting for our country to remain alive, I want to bring our guest on board. Good afternoon, Trevor Loudon.
Hi, Andrew. It's great to be on.
Yeah, and you're right now in the United States doing a book tour, and I believe you're what, in Florida right now?
I am in the Orlando area.
Altamonte? You know, I live just a little north of Florida, and I can't pronounce this name that you're supposed to be appearing in tonight. Eastmont Civic Center in Altamonte Springs, right?
I think they just say Altamont Springs, I think.
Well, that's right. No one could pronounce Buford correctly.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. It's on my blog, though, on my website, trevorlowden.com. It's got it all written down there in phonetic English.
And your website is trevorlowden.com, correct?
Yep, it is.
All right.
Yes.
I've got it up on the episode of the show, and I'm going to actually right now at this moment put it up in the chat room so people can take a look at it. You've got a new book out that is actually a rewrite of your old book.
No. My first book was Barack Obama and the Enemies Within, which was
Obama
and his communist and socialist. Sorry?
Yeah, I was confusing with another author I just had on about a week or so ago. His book was a rewriting of his old book. Yours is a continuation.
No, mine's all new material.
Yeah, it is. So tell us about the new book. So I apologize. I've got so many different things on my mind. I must be having a huge blonde moment.
Well, it's basically called The Enemies Within: Communists, Socialists, and Progressives in the U.S. Congress. And it's exactly what it says. It's a 700-page book profiling more than 51 members of the House and 14 senators with their communist, socialist, and Marxist ties, and detailing basically how since 1995 the Democratic Party has been taken over by the Marxists, and that the Marxists, through the control of the labor unions, are setting the direction and the policy of today's Democrats. So basically 20,000 card-carrying communists and Marxists are writing the laws that are governing the lives of 300 million Americans.
Now, it's funny because last night, one of the gentlemen that was at the meeting happens to be a Vietnam veteran, had brought up the back when we went into the war with Iraq, Bush came out with these deck of enemies, the 52 decks of the most wanted. And he said, well, can we do something for the 52 people that are destroying a country? It doesn't have to be just Democrats. And, of course, I'm wearing my Dump Lindsey Graham T-shirt, which people can get at southernsense.webs.com. And he's looking directly at the T-shirt. I hope he wasn't looking at the assets inside the T-shirt, but he was asking, you know, can we do that?
That's a clever idea, actually, because, you know, you could – and perhaps if you could email me on that, Anne, because it would be great to do a list of 51 of the worst, you know, of the most dangerous. And it would be clarify things for a lot of people, I think. It's quite a clever idea.
Well, then I definitely will send that off to you, in the idea on it. And a 52 deck, and I'm sure there's someone out there who would be happy to print this for us.
Mm. Oh, yeah, so, yeah, absolutely.
Man, What a coup if we do that going into the 2014 elections. That would be even better. You know, just before I came on air, I was up on Facebook in one of my nom de plumes. Actually, it was under my husband's name. And yesterday was St. Patty's Day. And up in New York City, the parade is hosted mostly by groups that have strong Roman Catholic backgrounds. And so they were denying access to a group, which is the LBGTs, the lesbian, gays, bisexual, transsexuals. They wanted to have an area of their own so they can flaunt, you know, their personal choice in this parade that's for a Christian saint. And they're saying, yeah, Wait a minute, this is basically a religious parade, and what you're doing is in direct violation of our religious views, so we cannot allow you to become part of the parade. So consequently, yeah, Some of the sponsors backed out, and one of them was Guinness Beer. And and I happen to enjoy Guinness beer. I happen to like, you know, dark beers. One of my favorite.
You like any form of alcohol, don't you, Anne?
What?
Don't you?
Me? You didn't see me drinking back in January, did you?
No. That fifth of Jack Daniels wasn't yours.
Anyway, So I posted up on the Guinness Facebook page, you know, how I said, you know, I happen to enjoy Guinness, you know, it's not just for St. Paddy's Day, I happen to enjoy it, you know, all year long. But if they're going to take that stance and then dictate what my religion is, then I will, and they're going to boycott something, you know, I believe in the St. Paddy's Day parade, then I in turn will boycott them. Now, they're one company,
absolutely.
And we're millions of Christians out here. So who's going to win, you know?
Yeah, and I love the idea of boycotts, you know, because, look, whatever your views are, the fact is that parade was organized by private individuals. If they want to exclude anybody for any reason, that is their right, just as it is your right to exclude anybody for any reason for coming into your house. It's private. It's a private event. So, you know, so if Guinness wants to play the game of kowtowing to the socialists and radicals, you know, Christians and anybody who believes in free speech should play the game of boycotting Guinness and do an organized thing on it, because that the power of the dollar is so important. You know, that's how Gandhi got the British out of India. He didn't fire a shot. He just organized a nationwide boycott of British businesses. And so these people who want to spit in the face of American values should face massive boycotts. That would soon teach them.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, here I am. I'm in this debate with someone else on the Facebook page. And obviously this was a liberal I was debating. And, of course, you know where that's going to go. And next thing I know, I step in the shower.
They're not very liberal. They're not actually – liberals aren't usually very liberal, are they?
No, they're not.
They're not willing to give other people their right to their opinion, you know.
Yeah, because I turned around and says, you know, if you have an LGBT parade, which, you know, they do, of course, the nation on a specific date, they have their own parade, but we don't go over there to their parade carrying banners and placards and saying, you must let us in your parade. And then
I'm a heterosexual sign carrying it. I have a white man that loves women sign. I guess I could carry that, and that would upset them. I mean, it's just
kind
of ridiculous.
Well, that'd be highly offensive to them, wouldn't it?
It would be, exactly.
And they have a right to exclude you.
And they do, absolutely. I have a quick question for Mr. Loudnick, and this is Chris Holly. What are your thoughts on the new mayor of New York, since you touch on communism and Marxism a lot, de Blasio? What are your thoughts on de Blasio so far?
Yeah, I think there'll be a whole chapter about him in my next book. Like, de Blasio, yeah, look, absolutely, you know, de Blasio is a hardcore Marxist. He's going to do what Harold Washington did to Chicago in the 1980s. In 1983, the Democratic Socialists of America and the Communist Party USA got a man called Harold Washington elected to the Chicago mayoralty. And he filled his administration chock full of Marxists, absolutely flooded it. And it was only when he died in 87 in office that the old guard retook over. But see, de Blasio is doing the same thing. He was elected by the Working Families Party, the Communist Party,
right.
Democratic Socialists of America, and all the Marxist groups. And he is going to flood the administration full of communists and socialists. He himself was part of the Dinkins administration back in the early 90s. Now, Dinkins was a card-carrying member of Democratic Socialists of America. He was a Marxist. And he flooded his administration full of Marxists as well. And if you look back at New York's history, the Dinkins era was one of the worst periods of New York's history. That was when crime was at its worst, sleaze was at its worst.
Absolutely.
The tourists were staying away because Dinkins was soft on crime. He didn't support the police, and he allowed the bad guys to take over New York, and the tourists stayed away in their millions. And the place was a pit. De Blasio is going to do this all over again if he gets it.
Exactly. He's going to. And I don't know if New York City, residents of New York City realize what they've gotten into, or if it was just a feel-good moment, vote again, once again, by some of the, you know, the art community, opera community that said, hey, this guy's great, and no, he's one of us, and let's get him in there. But I don't know if they know what they're getting into, you know. And like you said, it's just going to be – it's going to be back to where it was in the 80s. And, you know, if you went to Times Square and all that and all the smut shops and everything going on with that, and you've got the pat-down issues with the police in New York. And, I mean, it's just – it's good. It'll revert right back where it was, like you said, if they don't look out. And, you know,
well, it could be even worse, because the thing is then they didn't have Islamic terrorism. But now, you know, basically de Blasio said he's going to stop the police monitoring radicals. You know, the police have done a great job in New York repeating a repeat of 9/11. There's been several attempts, but if de Blasio guts police and stops their ability to monitor radicals, there could be a huge terrorist incident in New York. Many people could die. The economy will take a huge hit, and it'll all because the New Yorkers elected a Marxist.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned Mayor Dinkins. We had another name for him, and in the midst of his administration is when I swore myself in as a New York City police officer. So I know what those streets were like. My first day at a police academy, I had an arrest directly in front of the building that Serpico was shot in. That was my first foot post. That precinct was my command. So I can tell you what the belly of the beast looks like. And under Mayor Dickless is what we called him. That's when I walked into it. And I retired, thankfully, under Giuliani. And he wasn't all that great in working with the cops, as people think. But at least when it came down to which side of the fence was right or wrong, he normally landed pretty much on what was right. A few times he slipped and I won't even use some of the language I'm thinking of at the moment, but I would say Giuliani was 100% better than Mayor Dickless. And actually, I was sworn in by Out-of-Town Brown. I don't know if you remember the police commissioner. We called him Out-of-Town Brown because he was more out of town than he was in the city of New York. And the day I graduated the police academy, December 1986, he was drunk off his butt. Here we are in Madison Square Garden, 2,000 cops being sworn in, and here he is drunk at the podium giving his speech. What a sight.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, no. Well, you know, elections do have consequences. You know, New York elected a Marxist, and David Dinkins was a card-carrying Marxist. And so he had anti-American values. He hated the police. He loved the underclass. And what happens? You know, you got a disaster for several years. So now New York's about to do it all over again, and possibly even worse this time. You know, that the most important city in America has now got an anti-American Marxist as its mayor. He's already filling his administration full of Marxists. I could identify several of them. And he's going to take that city down. He's going to make a mess. And that doesn't just affect New York. That affects every part of America.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you saw it firsthand, Anne. You know, you were on the front line. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can tell you that when I got there, going through the Bushwick area of Brooklyn, I used to always pass this one mosque. And, you know, not knowing much about Islam back then and compared to what I do know now, I was always curious why they always had these men guarding the front of the mosque. And then just a few years later, 1993, February 21st, 1993, the World Trade Center was being bombed. And here I am sitting in the 9-0 waiting for shoulder surgery. So I was stuck behind the desk, but hearing the radio calls and answering the phone, people asking about family members. My own sister-in-law was in the tower when it was bombed.
Wow.
And it is not a day I will ever, ever forget. And our precinct was just over... We're right at the foot of the Williamsburg Bridge, and I can tell you how many members of our command that were sitting down in the lunchroom or just playing cards or whatever, you know, during their break, everyone suited up and went out that door. And all they said was to the desk officer, "I'm heading over the bridge." You know, our ESU unit and cars just piled over to help. And that's just the way cops are. And to have a mayor in office that disrespects our attempt to keep civility in the city is disheartening. You know, the morale of us at that time was so bad.
Yeah, well, you know, you're there to protect and serve the people, and you've got a you've got a basically a mayor who's the enemy of the people. And how, and just as our arms, just as your armed services in America right now have got a commander-in-chief who's the enemy of the people. And that's pretty demoralizing. You know, you want to follow a leader who's on the same page as you are, not the one who's basically working for the other side. So, you know, that's a pretty horrific situation to be in.
Yeah, it's amazing the assault that is going on with our military men and women by our administration, and the way that he is now taking battle-hardened commanding officers and making them retire, and then moving up in the ranks those that are yes men to him. And I'm listening for men and women, and I'm in the heart of the Tri-Command here in Beaufort. We've got the Marine Corps Air Station
right.
just 4 miles to the north. I've got the Parris Island Gateway Recruit Training Depot just to the south of me, just a matter of 6 or 7 miles. I've got the Naval Hospital just another 4 or 5 miles just to the west of me. I mean, we're in the heart of the Tri-Command. I can spit out my window and hit a military member or a veteran. And I'm listening to them, and I hear how dejected they are and what they're facing. You know, you've got now the Muslim Brotherhood is working with the military on bringing Muslim clerics into the military. The Muslim Brotherhood
yep.
is telling us who the Muslim clerics should be. Excuse me, aren't you telling our enemy who should be our shepherd?
It's like,
it is the craziest thing.
It's like in 1939, bringing Nazis in to you know, talk to the troops and make friends with them. You know, it's how insane can things be? And you have to look at it. Anybody who would order this does not have America's best interests at heart. You know, it's so glaringly obvious, yet people put up with this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Now
I have a quick question. What's the title of your new book again?
It's called The Enemies Within, Communists, Socialists, Progressives, and the U.S. Congress.
And just, I have tried to read a little bit of an overview today during my lunch break. Just if you just give me sort of a quick overview of a premise of the book and maybe just enlighten me a little bit on. I'm very curious to sort of see what direction you think this is going in with our Congress and the influence of Marxism or communism into the great American experiment, I guess is what they're trying.
Yeah. Well, what it says is this: if you apply for a federal government job in this country, you need an FBI security clearance,
right?
You know, and they can go through your underwear drawers. They check you out. They check out your relatives. They check out your education, drug habits, overseas travel, any radical friends you might have, because they need to know about you. You know, because you could be in a position to influence public policy someday, or be guarding state secrets. But what
right.
has happened in the United States is that since 1995, the Marxists have taken... In 1995, the Marxists took over the AFL-CIO. They put their man, John Sweeney, in as president. They took out the anti-communist clause from the AFL-CIO's constitution, and the Marxists have come back and taken over all the major labor unions. What that's done has given them leverage and control over the Democratic Party, because virtually every Democrat official at any level owes his job to the labor unions. Since 1995, the unions have mounted a big purge to get rid of all the centrist Democrats like Joe Lieberman, all the Dixiecrats, all the conservative Democrats. So now the Democratic Party is controlled at the top by Marxists. And they have infiltrated, I would say, at least 100 of their sympathizers into your Congress and at least 20 into your Senate through their control of the Democratic Party. So the book shows how this was done. It shows how they are actually writing policy. It traces the Marxist roots of Obamacare, the Marxist roots of the comprehensive immigration reform push. It talks about, you know, basically every major policy out of today's Democratic Party can be traced back to the Communist Party USA or Democratic Socialist of America or both. So what I'm saying is about 20,000 card-carrying communists in the country are writing the laws that control the lives of 300 million Americans. And the book specifically profiles 51 members of the House and 14 senators with identifiable communist, socialist, or radical progressive ties, and just shows exactly their level of influence and what they are doing to basically bring America down.
Who would be some of the senators besides Bernie Sanders?
Well, Bernie Sanders, Tom Harkin, Patty Murray, Maria Cantwell. Bernie Sanders is an obvious one, of course. Maria Cantwell, Tammy Baldwin, just trying to think off the top of my head, Al Franken,
right.
Jeff Merkley. So there's a few of those. There's about 14 senators in a profile, and then there's a whole bunch of people in the House, anything from, you know, Danny Davis and Barbara Lee, John Conyers, Rosa DeLauro, Nancy Pelosi, Mark Takano, Eddie Bernice Johnson, Raul Grijalva, Kyrsten Sinema. There's a whole bunch of them. Jerry Nadler, there's a whole bunch of them with identifiable communist ties. So what has
Clyburn.
Basically happened? Ike Clyburn, yeah, Jim Clyburn, and Mal Watt from your area too, but he's actually out of Congress now. He's hitting Fannie Mae or one of them. Yeah, so basically they're in there, and what has happened is the enemies of America have seized on this opportunity. You know, you've got a huge glaring hole in your national security, because if you stand for Congress, you need no security checks, none. BI doesn't do a damn thing. So the communists take over the local Democratic Party. They get one of their sympathizers elected to Congress, and he or she can serve on the Armed Services Committee or the Intelligence Committee or the Homeland Security Committee or the Science and Technology Committee, and get all sorts of secret information and influence public policy in all sorts of strange directions, and nobody says anything. It's a free run. They've got a high,
and then and then you have the unions. I mean, the liberal or the left always screams Koch brothers about them donating money to the conservative PACs, but the unions are donating 10-1 over them on campaign funding. I mean,
look
across the board.
Yeah, and they put all their manpower into it. But the key thing is the unions are setting the policy direction directly, and the communists control the unions. So the communists are setting the policy direction. You know, so whatever the Koch brothers are doing, the left is outdoing them by 10-1 covertly and maliciously. You know, I don't care if the Koch brothers influence things, because generally they believe in freeing up the economy and abiding by the Constitution. But the left is there to trash the Constitution and socialize the economy, impoverish America, and destroy the military. You know, I know which direction I'd rather go in, personally.
Do you think President Obama was heartbroken to have Van Jones not be as one of his czars, or do you think Van Jones is still influencing the White House and writing policy? And
Van Jones was only a tool. You know, he was put in there the same as there's a whole bunch of czars around Obama with Marxist ties. Van Jones was just one of the more obvious ones. So his agenda will still roll on. He's still doing his work out in the community. I think it was an embarrassment to Obama, and it woke a lot of people up, you know, because it was basically me who gave that information to Glenn Beck.
Mm-hmm.
He got Van Jones fired. So I think it woke a lot of people up who were on the fence about Obama. The fact that he had an actual communist as one of his czars, I think, woke a lot of people up, so it did help
then,
our side.
Then CNN hired Van Jones, so I guess welcome
to
the American television market.
yeah, exactly, you know.
The Communist
they've
News Network.
But they made him again, you know. Would they hire an ex-KKK member or an ex-Nazi?
Exactly.
You know?
They just legitimize
And the point is, Van Jones isn't ex. He's still as much of a Marxist as he ever was.
Exactly.
We got a caller coming in. Thomas, good afternoon.
Hi, Annie. How are you? Hey, how are you? I'm sitting here and listening to this conversation about the communists, which I've known for a while, that's been in our government, and my blood is boiling. And I'll tell you why my blood is boiling. it's funny with their strategies, how they do things. They do this, 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 and this. They set these little chess pieces into place. But they think, okay, now we got this. We wrote these and enacted these policies. But here's my question. Because what the communist platform in and of itself is all about, not only is it about total control, but it's about being godless in their gutless. And as someone whose faith is a follower of Jesus Christ, I am quite frankly getting sick and tired of individuals like that telling me what I'm supposed to do. Now, what do we do about it? Enough, we talk about educating the voters. Obviously, half this nation are a bunch of uninformed voters with their heads buried in buckets of sand, so that's not going to work. The second thing... Go ahead.
Okay. Well, what's your question, Thomas? You want me to address that?
How do we combat though? Do we prepare to get down and dirty as in all out fight? How can we come up against the idiots like that? You know, exposing them don't seem to be working. So what do we do?
Well, look. The basic fact is, Thomas, you have to the very first thing when you're in a hole. The first thing you can do is stop digging. So right now, we've got the Democrats in power who are run by the communists. The first step, but by no longer the last step, is to get the Democrats out. That has to be done because nothing else counts if you don't do that. So therefore, you have to get into that GOP and make sure that the next candidates who stand for office are real Reagan-esque visionary figures who want to take the country back, the people like the Ted Cruz's and the Rand Pauls and the Mike Lees, and not the John Boehner and Karl Rove types. So that's the first concrete step, because you can educate people all you like, but if you can't get rid of the Democrats, can't change that government, you're going to have a communist USA. It's just as simple as that.
Right. Well, how do we keep from getting, like you just mentioned, John Boehner and the individuals like that who are basically Democrats in Republican garb? How do we make sure that those Republican officials who campaign on, say, like you said, a platform of Reaganomics, Constitution, once they get in there, then suddenly they flip the script? How do we keep that from happening?
Well, you know, that hasn't happened with Ted Cruz or Rand Paul or Mike Lee or Jim Bridenstine. There are certain people in there who are staying the course and doing things. Ron DeSantis down here in Florida, great examples. So you've got to do, look, in 1980, the grassroots got behind Ronald Reagan, and they basically bypassed the GOP and they got their candidate because the GOP hated Reagan. The old guard hated Reagan. So it was the grassroots, by getting into the Democratic Party, taking over all those precinct positions, taking over the party structure, enabled Reagan to get in and have a Reagan revolution. We're going to be doing the same thing right now. Anybody who's in the Tea Party should be getting to those GOP precinct positions and getting things ready for a Ted Cruz or a Rand Paul or a Mike Lee to get the presidential nomination in 1980. That's the only way out of this. Anything else is just basically what we call peeing in the wind. You know, you got to take power back.
Right.
And they did it with Reagan in 1980. You know, you can bitch and moan all you like, but unless you're in that GOP, taking over those positions and setting the course yourself, the old Republican old guard are going to win, and they're going to give you a Jeb Bush or a Chris Christie, and the Republicans will lose. And even if they don't lose and fluke a win, it's not much better because you've still got another progressive in there.
Well, I think
the battle for this country is the battle for who wins the GOP. If the old guard win, this country is screwed. If the insurgents, the Ted Cruzes win, this country's got a fighting chance.
Well, we're seeing that. We saw just last week with Florida, with their win on that one. We have a huge battle here in South Carolina going after Lindsey Graham, and letting everyone know I am wearing my Lindsey Graham, dumped Lindsey Graham T-shirt that they can get at southernsense.webs.com. I went to the Tea Party meeting wearing it. But I had one of the members of the Tea Party going, we've got to get behind one of these candidates. There's 8 people running against Lindsey Graham. And I said, no. He goes, well, if he gets more than 50%, he's going to, I said, the more people that get in that race, the harder it is for him to get 50%, and we'll force him into a runoff. Furthermore, Trevor, you would have loved this. If you had been standing with me on Friday, I went nose to nose with Lindsey Graham. I personally went nose to nose, and I didn't realize how short he was. I was looking him straight in the eye. You know how small I am. You know exactly how tiny I am. I'm at 5'3", and I'm staring Lindsey Graham in the eyes. I'm going, I didn't realize he was such a short little shit. But I asked him 2 questions. And you know, Lindsey Graham touts, I am so pro-military, anything and everything for the military, he tells everyone. Well, I caught him in a huge lie. South Carolina, actually, election law states that between the time of a primary and the next election, you must have 45 days to allow the military to get their ballots, to fill them out, and send them back in. 45 days. Right now, our South Carolina GOP scheduled the runoff election, should it occur, within 14 days. Gee, there seems to be 31 days missing there. So we have a gentleman here in South Carolina by the name of Joe Carroll who filed a lawsuit with the Department of Justice saying it's in violation of election law. It requires 45 days to allow the military to get their ballots in. So he's trying to push the runoff election to 45 days after the primary. Well, I turned around, and Lindsey Graham's fighting this. So I said, sir, and I asked the question basically like this. I said, Joe Carroll has a lawsuit with the Department of Justice about the election, the runoff election after the primary, which right now is scheduled at 2 weeks. Would you support that lawsuit? And then I paused, and I did it deliberately, because as soon as I paused, he said, no. And then I finished the question with, to support our military's vote. And he goes, oh, the military's vote. Oh, yes, I would support the military's vote, this and that. And then he starts in with this, oh, yeah, I love that one. I did the pause just deliberately to allow him to step into the trap, and boy, did he go hook, line, and sinker. And then he gets into this really elaborate explanation saying, well, the military is going to get a special ballot. And I said, what do you mean by that? He goes, well, they're going to get a ballot where they can make choice number 1 and choice number 2. And I said, they're voting for 2 individuals for the same seat? He goes, yes. And I said, well, how does that work with the rest of the ballots everyone else fills out? Oh, you're going to fill out a normal ballot. So there'll be 1 set of rules for the military and 1 set of rules for the voting public. And then he goes, well, that's the ballot because if they can't vote in the primary, but at least they can get 1 of their people in. You've got 9 people running. What happens if both the people you voted for do not make it to the runoff? He had no answer.
The whole point is the military are more likely to support genuinely conservative candidates. So therefore, they do not want the military to vote. It's as simple as that. Because they will tend to vote against Lindsey Graham.
But there's also another benefit. If it happens within 2 weeks, he's got the money power. He's got the name recognition. If you stretch it to 45 days, whoever will be his challenger in that runoff now has all that extra time to get his name out to the public, for the public to find out who that person is. And he doesn't want that advantage. He wants the people that vote straight across the ticket. He wants those independents. He wants the libertarian voters that will vote because they recognize his name. He doesn't want that name recognition. And right now...
No, you're 100% right, yeah.
And right now he's got the upper hand. But if this lawsuit does go through and they do adhere to election law, you know, he's not going to have that. And the military will get their chance to vote, and Lindsey Graham will then be finally retired. Second question I asked him involved the Ukraine, because there's a package before the Senate for an economic relief to them. And they tie the economic relief into the International Monetary Fund reform package. That reform package has been sitting dead in the Senate for 3 years because it cedes our sovereignty to the IMF and increases our responsibility. We already contribute one-third of their finances. They want to increase that.
Well, that's something that could be cut before the military budget gets touched, isn't it?
Isn't it? Gee, you would think. So I said to him, I said, again, I used the pregnant pause. And I said, do you support the economic package going to the Ukraine with the IMF reform package attached to it? And he jumped in and said, yes, I do. And I said, you didn't allow me to finish. And I said, the IMF reform package that cedes our sovereignty and increases our responsibility at the same time. Oh, I'm not for that. So I said, so you'll vote for it without the IMF attached to it? He goes, yes, but you just told me you would vote for it with the IMF. Oh, yes, I would. Well, excuse me, Senator, are you going to vote to cede our sovereignty or are you going to vote to keep our sovereignty? And, of course, next thing I know, I'm getting shuffled out of the way.
Yeah, that's very awkward questions from. Well, good for you, Anne. But the point, the thing nobody's, people aren't talking about is that the United States is bound by a treaty to defend the Ukraine militarily. You know, where is any talk of that happening?
It got shuffled to the side.
Yeah, the Ukraine gave up its nuclear weapons on the condition that Britain and the United States would help the Ukraine militarily if they were attacked by Russia. So where is America stepping up to honor their treaty?
Yeah, that didn't work out too well for them at this point.
No, yeah. They took their visas away,
no.
So they can't go to the Hamptons.
No, yeah,
you know. So they send John Kerry in. You know, what's John Kerry going to do? The worst he can do is to cut off Russia's ketchup supplies. You know, that's all he can threaten them with.
No more Heinz 57 for your steaks.
Yeah, well, that's going to terrify Putin, isn't it? You know, you're abandoning the Ukraine. You know, they're brave people. They're fighting for their liberty. And the point that Americans don't realize and that Europeans don't realize that if Russia is trying to reestablish the old Soviet empire, and if they can take the Ukraine back, they can then dominate Europe. You know, the Ukraine is their pathway to the control of Europe. If they lose the Ukraine, they cannot dominate Europe. If they retake the Ukraine, Europe will come under Russian domination. So this is serious for all of us. This is hugely serious.
And absolutely no one paid attention. 2 days ago, I believe it was two and a half days ago, Russian troops entered a town outside of the Crimea, inside the Ukraine. They took over the town. And no one in the international community, especially the United States, made a peep. It was a small byline in the newspaper I caught. And then I started going on the internet to see if there was any other story about it. Nowhere could you find anything else. And then Putin just, like I believe yesterday, said he could nuke the United States out of existence.
Yeah, and what's Obama going to do? You know, this is the equivalent of America invading British Columbia. You know, you imagine if America invaded British Columbia, what an outrage that would be, and rightly so. Yet that Russia is allowed to invade a sovereign state protected treaty with the United States, and Obama's going to do nothing.
A few sanctions here and there. That's about
it. He's going to slap Putin on the wrist, you know, and will not even do that. And Putin's just going to laugh, you know. And that is why I say that, you know, this is the tragedy of the leadership of America right now, because this is affecting all around the planet. Every one of your allies is looking at America right now and thinking, what is the use of being allied to America? You know, Obama betrayed Poland and Czechoslovakia, took away their missile shield. He abandoned the Georgians to the Russians. He's basically screwed up Israel. He's destroyed all of Israel's friends in the region. You know, and Israel may be forced to take desperate measures to defend themselves. And that could put us into World War III. You know, Japan is now rearming. It was never supposed to rearm after World War II. It was supposed to rely on American protection. but now they're rearming because they can't trust Obama to protect them from North Korea and China. You know, yeah. What happened when Obama called for help to go into Syria? All your allies just stood back. They just stood back because why would you help America? You know, I'm not saying you should have gone into Syria. That was badness. But this is a serious situation when your allies around the world are basically deserting you because they see that America has deserted them. That's and the Russians true. And the Chinese and the Iranians are making hay. And they're just going to take over this planet. And that is the plan.
Absolutely. And the Iranians are going ahead with their nuclear program. They're completely ignoring us. And now what I find
And Obama wants to cut the U.S. nuclear arsenal to 265 nuclear weapons when the Russians alone have got more than 6,000. But that's all right, because Russia's your friend now, right? And China's your friend. And Iran is your friend. You don't have to worry about being well-armed now, do you?
Oh, no. Just turn around, hand the weapons over, and say, come take us. Come be our masters and rulers, which is basically what he's saying. What I find is really curious
Obama is rolling over and exposing his soft little belly for Putin to tickle. That's what he's doing.
What I find is the conflux of events that are happening, because now you've got Crimea going on with Russian rattling her saber. You've got Iran increasing their nuclear weapons, going ahead with their nuclear program. And now Iran is directly involved in this Malaysian Flight 370 that recently disappeared 10 days ago. Today's the 10th day. And now they're saying it's possible the plane has landed and may be used as a weapon. Now, I'm finding it's not a coincidence that all three of these things are happening at the same time. I'm telling you, by the time all is said and done, you're going to find all three are tied together.
Well, look, you could well be. You know, I don't know about the airliner. I haven't heard the latest news on it. But for whatever's happening, as America is looking weaker and weaker in the world, and the bad guys are looking stronger and stronger. And what's that going to do for world peace? What's that going to do, you know, for liberty? You know, it's putting us all in danger. It's putting putting our freedoms in danger, and more ever, it's putting our lives in danger, all of us.
That definitely is. And Thomas, you had a question?
Yeah, Andy, it's more of a statement than a question. The United States has always, we've always lived by treaties and stuff like that. When we signed both strategic arms limitation treaties and stuff like that, and, you know, we made headway. But I think I've made this statement before on the show, and it's a question that I put out there. I know the answer to this because of some friends that I have in certain places, but do you all really think that we destroyed as many of our nuclear weapons as they think we did? We knew Russia would not honor their end of the nuclear treaty. We didn't either. And that's all that's all I'm going to say about that one.
Well, I'm hoping you're correct, but, you know, I've also heard that America has built no more nukes since 1992, and the shelf life of those nukes is 15 to 20 years. So, unless you start building a lot more very quickly, you're going to have a lot of obsolete nukes. So, but I hope you're right, Thomas.
Yeah, I heard the same thing, that nothing's been built since 1992, and right now everything is at least 2 years past its shelf life. And it leaves us in a very, very scary and bad situation. I want to remind everyone that we are broadcasting on Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, as well as on TeaPartyCommunity.com. If anyone's PO'd with Facebook, which I am today because they took down my post that I put up on Guinness protesting their removing their sponsorship from the St. Patty's Day Parade in New York City. So go to TeaParty.com. It works just like Facebook, but without the censorship, without all the other BS. You find like-minded people up there. I know Ken, the Exceptional Conservative Show, has gone over to Tea Party Community, so you all also go over there. Trevor, you should check it out. It's a great place to hawk your book over there.
So what was it, sorry?
TeaPartyCommunity.com.
Okay.
It looks and feels just like Facebook, but it doesn't have all the heavy restrictions and everything else that just drive you crazy.
Can you send me the link? I don't have a pen on me right now, and I'll forget. But if you could send that, I'll do that.
It will be on your way.
I have a question from Mr. Loudon, just a totally off-topic question, and this is just a little bit of reading I was doing, the background reading on you online. What are your thoughts on the legalization of marijuana in Colorado and Washington State? I wasn't sure what your thought process was on legalization of drugs or in the libertarian sense.
Look, this is my view on that. You know, like, if we lived in an ideal world and where there was totally free medicine, where the state was not involved in medicine at all, and everybody had to bear the costs of their own stupidity and bad health choices, I would say, yeah, go ahead and legalize marijuana and legalize drugs, because then it would become very unpopular very quickly. There'd actually be less of it consumed, because people would have to pay higher premiums for consuming it. You know, the only reason, one of the main reasons drugs are so popular right now is they're illegal. You know, people like to be rebels. They like to, when they prohibited alcohol, it became fashionable to go to speakeasies. So I think it's a dumb move, personally. I think it's a waste of time and counterproductive. But, you know, like ultimately, I'd love to see a world where the state is completely out of medicine, and when you have that situation, if you want to go around legalizing drugs, all that's fine, because I don't think anybody would be silly enough, or very few people would be silly enough to consume them anyway.
Yeah. No, I was very – there was different – I read something online. I'm not sure if it was accurate. It was just different conflicting statements, I think, on what your stance was on that, but – now I think you cleared it up, because I was kind of a little
curious. Well, look, in the ideal situation, of course, drugs should be legal. Your people should be able to do anything they want with their own body, as long as they're bearing the 100% responsibility for that. We're not in that situation right now. You know, you've got, well, especially not with socialized medicine, you can take all the drugs you want, and everybody else has to pick up the tab.
Right.
You know? Like, I heard all sorts of stories at Colorado, you know, people getting into lifts in the middle, you know, getting into elevators in the middle of downtown Colorado and prestigious buildings, and people walking, smoking joints, you know, and kids in schools, you know, with sucking on their pen in the classroom, but the pen's full of cannabis oil, you know, things like this. So I don't think it's going to be a happy experiment, put it that way.
No,
right.
It won't be. And we got another caller in on the line. Let me bring this person in. Skype caller, you're on the air live with Southern Sense. This is your host, Annie. Who am I speaking to?
This is Joe, Annie. How are you doing?
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Oh,
hi, Joe.
Yeah. Tell me, how many troops should we commit to our defending the Ukraine, Crimea, and let's say any other types of territories that the Russians may want to annex?
How many troops?
Yeah.
Did you say, well, as many as is required?
So 100,000 American boys and girls, according to you, if that's necessary, should be committed to go overseas to fight other people's wars.
Well, if you've signed a treaty to protect the country, yes, they should. Does a treaty not mean anything?
No, it doesn't. Because there are so many treaties that mean absolutely nothing, which aren't in the benefit
I believe a treaty does mean something, and if the majority of the American people do not want to honor their treaty, they have to get their senators to change it.
Well,
you can't just go changing. You can't just go changing the law because, you know, you can't just go ignoring the law because you don't like
and
it.
Treaty are you talking about between us and the Ukraine?
The Treaty of Vienna that was signed in about 1995, the Ukraine agreed to live, I can't remember the exact date, the Ukraine agreed to give up its nuclear weapons in exchange for British and American protection in the event of Russian aggression. Look it up online.
Yeah, I've heard something about that. So
that was signed under Clinton, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. So, look, you know, you may not agree with it,
No, I don't. Here's another question for him. When should this stop by America? Suppose we signed a dozen treaties in these dozen places that we have the treaties with. They have wars with Russia, China, and let's say North Korea. So as far as you're concerned, 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 more of our boys, primarily our boys, should go overseas to fight these wars. Is that right?
Absolutely.
So
if
why
you've
don't
signed
you
a treaty,
let me answer your question.
I haven't answered it yet.
Yeah, you did, because you
Let me answer. Let me answer. You know, I don't. You know, basically, you've got to realize the fact here. If you let the Russians take the Ukraine, they're going to take Europe, and then they're coming after you. They are coming after you big time now. You can either decide to stop them when you have a chance of beating them, because if you put your troops in there now, they'll back down, and not a shot will be fired. But if you don't defend
Joe,
I'm going to let him answer.
I'm not going to answer your question if you don't let me finish. I'll answer any question if you let me finish the answer. Fair enough?
All right, I've got him on mute so he can answer, and then I'll bring him back on live. So just, Joe, let him answer the question.
So the situation is this. You've signed a treaty to protect the country. You can either honor that treaty and make the Russians back off and restore your prestige in the world and ensure that peace has a chance, or you can be cowards now and let the Russians take Ukraine, then take Europe, and then take you out when millions and millions of you die. That is your choice. So you can either stop a small problem with a little bit of possible sacrifice, or you have a much larger problem down the track. That's the way it is. You know, you look at Britain in World War II. They signed a treaty to protect Poland from Nazi aggression. The Nazis invaded Poland, started the war. Britain joined the war with France to help the Poles. That stopped eventually, with American help, stopped the Nazis. Had they not done that, there was huge sacrifice. Had they not done that, the Nazis would have overrun the whole of Europe, and then they would have conquered Britain. So all those British boys would have died, plus a hell of a lot more. They stopped the problem when it was small. They should have stopped the problem even before that. But there comes a time when there's a line in the sand, you have to back it up. If you're not willing to back it up when it's small, you're going to take it as a much bigger problem later. I'm not for war. I'm not for Americans spilling their blood. I'm for standing up for freedom. And
I hear you. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, you're live, Joe.
Okay. So you're saying that if we don't do this now, that eventually the communists, the boogeyman of the 50s, they're going to take over the world and we're going to be helpless once they build up enough power. Is that right?
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying.
They didn't do it before, but they're going to do it now, even though Russia's weaker, even though they have a lower population.
Russia's stronger than it's ever been. Russia is allied with China and Iran.
So how are they going to take over the world?
Oh, just let me explain. I'll tell you. I'm just saying it. Russia is allied with China right now. In the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is a new Warsaw Pact, they've got most of Latin America on their side, most of Africa. They've got most of Europe neutralized, and your military is cutting back and scaling back all over the world. You know, your America is on the downslope, and they are on the upslope. You know, the Iranians, just a minute. I'm not going to talk to you if you don't let me finish.
You don't take. You know,
the Iranians.
Know what they're talking
look,
about.
Can you
I
put
the, to take a minute?
All right, Joe, hang on a second. Let him finish first. Okay.
No, you ask for an explanation how the Russians are going to take over the world. That takes more than a minute. You know, you are almost defenseless right now against EMP weapons. The Iranians and North Koreans could set off six nuclear weapons in your atmosphere and put the United States back to the Stone Age. Your own government has estimated that if that happened, 90% of Americans would be dead within a year. you're living on a knife edge. All the bad guys of the world arrayed against you, and you don't even realize it. And you're trying to tell me that you don't worry about Russia or China. They are far more powerful than you think, and you are far weaker than you think.
Okay, let me bring Joe back on so he can respond. Joe, you're back on.
Okay. So you still haven't said how they're going to take over the world except by allies. Now, the only danger that we're really in would be of nuclear weapons. China and Russia.
No, there's a lot more dangers than that.
Now it's my time to talk. China and Russia have had nuclear weapons since the 1940s. If they conquer the rest of Europe, they're still going to have nuclear weapons. We still have that mad principle in effect. So how are they going to now all of a sudden be so dangerous? Now, I know you just mentioned the EMPs, but everybody's got EMPs. Why would they do this? And once they've done it, supposedly according to your philosophy, once they gain enough strength, they're going to do it. Why would they do it? They would endanger their own safety. We would fire back and kill everybody.
Look, okay, this is the plan. This is the military plan for taking out the United States if they have to do it. And the Russians thought they could win this 15 years ago, and this comes from a defector, the former head of Russian military intelligence in the United States, who defected in 1998. The plan to take out the United States is this. Russia has a huge number of nuclear weapons, but a very unreliable army. Too many drunks, too many Muslims. China has a huge, it doesn't have so many nukes, but they have a massive surplus of young men. They've got 30 million young men who will never marry because of the child policy. And that's a huge social problem for China. They know that's going to blow up in their face very soon if they don't do something about it. So the plan that was hatched many years ago and is still in effect as far as I know is that Russia will nuke the continental United States, a massive nuclear attack. They think most of your weapons will be taken out. They may take a few hits, but they've got the best civil defense system in the world, and they're not worried about that. They will then invade Alaska and parts of Canada and stop at the border. Then the Chinese come across the Pacific and wave after wave after wave. They will lose 20, 30 million men, but that's fine because then they get a foothold in the continental United States and they invade. In the meantime, the Nicaraguans and Cubans and Venezuelans are invited up into the southern United States for looting rights. It's basically a Red Dawn scenario, and it's a live operating strategy right now. The Chinese have got every aquifer in the United States mapped because they know that certain aquifers flush out nuclear radiation very, very quickly, and other aquifers hold it for a long period of time. They need to know where they can settle their people quickly and the areas they need to avoid. This is all planned out. It's all ready to go, and they will use that strategy if they can't get their way by other means.
So you're saying this defector has told us that they have the best nuclear defense shield today, and as a result...
It's not him saying that. It's just common knowledge.
Hold on.
That's common knowledge.
Okay. So they supposedly have this very, very good defense nuclear shield, and they are going to bomb us without any real retaliation from us against them because of this defense shield. Is that right?
Well, not significant. Not enough to worry them. They might lose a quarter of their population, but that's okay because they'll win. They'll win the war.
So the Russians are going to win the war because they're going to bomb us, but we don't have enough retaliatory power because of their defense shield to wipe them out, or the world.
Well, no, I'm saying their civil defense. They have the best civil defense system in the world. They reason they can take most of your nukes out in a first strike, that Obama is cutting your nukes anyway. A lot of your nuclear weapons are obsolete, and they've got a hell of a lot more of them than we realize. So that is their plan.
How do you know our nuclear weapons are obsolete? If our nuclear weapons are obsolete, then the Russians' nuclear
weapons
are
obsolete. Well, because there have been no new ones produced since 1992.
Okay.
Their shelf life is 15 to 20 years.
Right, and they're doing tests now. I know that. Here's another thing. This is the person that you're talking about, this 1998 defector. I've also read a document that disclosed the classified information that the Russians The estimate that we had of their rush of their nuclear arsenal was supposedly...
I didn't hear that, sorry.
I said there was a declassified document, supposedly a declassified document, that our estimate of their nuclear arsenal was supposed to be pretty close to ours, their ICBMs, a few hundred, if not a few thousand, when in reality it was only a couple of dozen. So the intelligence was either faulted or it was, you know, people have said...
Look, my figures are at least...
My figures are at least 6,000. Where do you get... How do you know you can trust this particular information from this defector?
All right, Jared, this would be the last question, because we're coming down to the last four minutes here.
This is not just one defector I'm talking about. It is. There's a lot of sources who put the Russian nuclear arsenal at least 6,000, at least, and suspected many, many more, because they do. There's so much of their stuff covertly that you would really not know. But the point is, are you willing to risk this? You know, they are planning to take you out. There's no question of that. You know, they'll take you out economically, they'll take you out nuclear-wise, whatever. Now, you can take a stand against them and snuff the problem out at the beginning, or you can wait till it's too late. What are you going to do?
Well, let's hope we don't wait until it's too late. Trevor, this show has gone really, really fast. We're down to our last 3 minutes.
And I have to say goodbye, too. I'm actually going to relocate to New Zealand later this afternoon. So. I'll be leaving the U.S. now after that conversation.
Well, Chris, thank you for co-hosting with me. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. I have a little plug. I will be with our wonderful – we have two senators in each state they represent, and I will be with our wonderful U.S. Senator Tim Scott on Sunday, March 30th up here in Charleston at Charlestown Landing for a fundraiser, and it's open to the public. You can call his office in D.C. for more information, and that's from 4 to 6 on the 30th of this month with our wonderful Senator Tim Scott, who will win re-election in November. So, and it was a pleasure speaking with you, Mr. Loudon, and I look forward to reading your book. And again, I'm going to move to New Zealand here later this afternoon.
Okay.
So, Godspeed.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, Annie. Take care, Chris. Thank you. Trevor, we had a fantastic time, and like I said, it went back by really, really fast. Now, I got to remember, I got to get some stuff over to you. I know I have to get you over. Oh, my goodness. My mind just went blank. The information about the 52 deck of cards, and what was the other one I have to give you?
The website, the Tea Party website.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. Tea Party Community.
Now, can I just also tell people where they can get my book as well?
Absolutely, please do.
Okay, you go to Pacific Free. You can get it on Amazon or Kindle or Nook, but go to the best place is to go to PacificFreedomFoundation.org. Just Pacific Freedom Foundation, Google that. And you can get my book online, both my books online there.
All right. I was putting up in the chat room your link, but I accidentally spelled your name wrong, T-R-V-O-R. I'll get it up there. And you can also go to trevorloudon.com, and there's a link to it for the book, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yep, Trevor, I'll be talking to you. And right now you're in Florida, and anyone wants to know where your stops are, they can go to trevorloud.com and see where your next stop is.
Yeah.
Because you'll be in the Orlando area tonight.
Yeah, I'm speaking in Altamont tonight, the Villages tomorrow night, I think then Melbourne Thursday night, and Jupiter on Friday night. And then I go to Texas and Northern California.
Well, you'll be here for a little while, so people can see you at your book signings. So, Trevor, I'll be talking to you later, and thank you for joining us.
You're most welcome. Thanks, Anne. Bye-bye.
All right. So, thank you for listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. Joe and Thomas, thank you for the phone calls in. They were absolutely wonderful. And, Joe, love you, baby. It was coming to the hard questions. But we'll be back again on Friday with Brenda Leonard. She's running for Congress in the great state of Texas. The next week we'll have the Liberty Institute and Lee Bright running against Lindsey Graham.
Count on
until
me,
then,
my
have a
friend.
Safe and healthy weekend.
I'll get right
week.
Up
Bye.
In trouble. You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.